Thanks for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. The think tank Research for Social Advancement, or better known as REFSA, recently published a working paper comparing stimulus measures across Malaysia, Singapore and the UK. Now joining us on the line to discuss the comparative analysis of the different packages, we have with us Ivy Quek, Research Director at REFSA. Ivy, thank you for coming on the show tonight. Now, could you begin by explaining to us whether economic support packages through different countries are comparable to each other?
Hi, good evening. So our paper compares the stimulus package of the three countries, Malaysia, Singapore and United Kingdom. And while it is actually quite difficult to compare across different countries, we nevertheless try to do it in both qualitative and quantitative way. And we have found that these three countries have adopted a very different approach. So in the case of Singapore and the UK, their package actually focused mainly on companies and also in preserving jobs, whereas the Malaysian package actually focused more on maintaining the household income. So after taking into consideration the announcement made by the Prime Minister yesterday, we have found that the Malaysian stimulus essentially allocates about 1% of the GDP to in terms of helping companies to maintain employment, compared to the Singapore one, which is about 3.8% GDP. Whereas the UK, with their existing safety net in place, have also allocated an additional 0.9% of the GDP.
So, Ivy, can I just clarify? So you're saying that after taking into account the Prihatin Plus package that was announced yesterday, Malaysia's stimulus actually is 1% of GDP. At the moment, the whole stimulus package is being touted to be at least 17% of GDP. In fact, one of the highest in the world. So you're saying for us to focus on just that 1%?
Right. So what we have done is actually we have categorized the we have break down the stimulus package and categorized it in different categories. So there is cash measures, which includes things like the cash transfers and job support. And then there's also the non-cash measures that would be things like tax deferment and loan guarantees. For the purpose of this analysis, we actually excluded the $100 billion loan moratorium as well as the EPF withdrawal of $40 billion. Reason being that our argument is that these are not borne by the government, and therefore it is not a fair comparison to include them. So, with the rest of the cash and non-cash measures, that actually comes out to about 6.8% of our GDP, and of that, about 1% is for job support. Essentially, the wage subsidy program.
Right. I wonder if you could address the question of the duration of these packages, because we look across the three countries, the UK in some ways had a slow start when it came to dealing with COVID, whereas Singapore had seemed to have an early start. The duration, does it matter to you from a qualitative point of view? Some of these measures, some of them stretching 6 months and so on and so forth?
Yeah, definitely. I think it matters a lot. I think in the case of Singapore, they are very generous. Not only they offer up to 75% of the salary of each employee for the highly impacted sectors, they actually offered it for a duration of 9 months, whereas ours pales in comparison in the sense that we are offering a fixed amount, and we are also only offering for 3 months. And I think that it is a little bit too optimistic to assume that our economy will pick up steam again in a short period of 3 months. So definitely, I think that in terms of policy recommendation that I would make to the government, while I think the wage subsidy program is a great, great step in the right direction, I would think that the companies would require support for a much longer duration.
So, Ivy, is this a question of capacity, where Singapore might have larger reserves to draw on, or the UK might have, Malaysia might have less? Is that why the duration is shorter for Malaysia as compared to these other two countries?
I think certainly Singapore would have a deeper pocket compared to us. But then I think if we look at it, this is really an extraordinary time. And I think that this is really not a time for us to be too fixated about fiscal prudence. It is definitely better to do too much than to do too little, because otherwise our economy will tank and we will plunge into a deeper recession. And I think that the government would need to step in to do something more drastic.
Ivy, can I ask you whether it is useful to have a comparison between Malaysia, Singapore and the UK? I mean, given that our economies are so different and even the nature of our MCOs, so to speak, are different in all three different countries.
Yeah, so while we do have different systems, but I think that typically Singapore and UK has been sort of like the traditional yardstick for Malaysia when it comes to doing policy analysis. And we are, in a way, facing a somewhat similar situation with our neighbour Singapore. Mm-hmm. And I think that in terms of, you're definitely right that there is a variation in terms of the intensity of the movement control. And if you compare across the three countries, Malaysia would actually be the one that has the strictest movement control. I mean, Singapore has just got to a more stricter measures, but before that they were quite loose. And as you know, that the stricter the movement control it, the harder it would hit the economy.
Ivy, we just have about a minute left. I wonder if you can address the issue that you picked up in your report about the self-employed. Singapore giving a lot of support to the self-employed, Britain as well, those in the gig economy, Malaysia not so much. Why do you think that's true?
To be honest, I don't really know why there is such a shortcoming. I think that is quite regrettable, given that our gig economy is quite huge. I think it's about 26% of our economic growth, and these are people that are very precarious and vulnerable. I would definitely think that they will need more support. I think that perhaps the lack of comprehensive data could be one of the reasons why the government have not been able to respond in a very coherent way when it comes to helping this group of people. Mm. So that is something for us to ponder as well in the longer term. How do we have a more robust social safety net, and how do we actually be able to capture these people in our system better?
All right. Well, Ivy, thank you for speaking with us and sharing the insights of this working paper. Appreciate your time tonight. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, with me, Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening. Thank you so much for watching and good night.